back to Yagabapple time. So, one thing that I do want to talk about, which is really more of a minor point, is trying to figure out creative ways of working your phrases into what you're saying publicly. There's not really a prescriptive way to talk about that, because it literally just relies on the creativity of the person speaking, and somewhat it relies on what your actual phrase is, which you have very little control over as a Yagababble. So that's going to have like a lot of variability to it. But I do think it's something that is worth people thinking about deeper. When you get your phrase, what ways can I try to split these words up so that they're across seemingly different sentences, but actually they're my phrase. Those kinds of things. But I think the bigger point for Yagababble that I have never heard anybody talk about, and of course somebody may have thought of this and be talking about it elsewhere that I simply haven't heard, but I haven't heard anybody talk about this, which is seeding your phrase to good players. We all know that, your most basic Yagababble strategy is your minions know what your phrase is, they set you up publicly, maybe they say it themselves. When you speak with people, when we make interactions with other people, and this is not just true for Clock Tower, but in general here, we tend to mirror other people. And the more we like somebody, the better time we're having, the more we tend to mirror other people. It's just a sort of thing that humans do because we're a social species. You can look up the psychology behind those kinds of things in your own time. But it is a thing that we do. And you can use this to great effect as a Yagababble by saying your phrase privately where it's not going to count and working it into your conversations. And now you have good players who may end up repeating that phrase without really realizing it or thinking about it or repeating parts of the phrase. And now's your chance to jump in there by saying it yourself and it'll blend right in. I think that is an underutilized and under-talked about strategy that should mean Yagababble should maybe move up. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
That's probably correct.
I'm looking for something. Sorry. Just give me 1 second.
Yeah, Yag is such a tough demon to. Yag is such a tough demon to evaluate in so many ways because of, like, the way it can, like, play out so differently for different personalities who might draw it, and.
I can agree with that, but I do actually think that this strategy can help with those players who are a little bit quieter in Town Square usually, because if you're putting in the work to do this, like, privately with players, if you're being active behind the scenes, then those players may be more inclined to, like, turn to you during the public town time and, you know, address you. And that gives you, again, another sort of, like, excuse to start talking that isn't looking like you're just, you know, bulldozing your way into the public conversation. And, like, Yagababble is always going to be a character that some people will struggle with because there are people who they want to play, like, much more passively that they don't even, like, put in a lot of that, a lot of private talking, and they just kind of, like, vibe a lot of the game. And that's a totally valid way for people to play. But those people are going to struggle with Yagababble, and any of these thoughts about Yagababble and its potential strategy is probably just never going to apply to them.
Yeah. No.
At all.
I think your point was a real, like, important one. Is, like, there's a lot of stuff you can do to seed things,
I remember a game on the TPI stream where Bort seeded, I think his phrase was bad kill or something like that, and he seeded the phrase, I think this is a bad kill, a lot throughout the game. And it was like, it was just a thing that just came, ended up coming across naturally. Like he would say, like, in a private conversation, he would say, I think so-and-so is a bad kill, or, you know, I don't know if this is a good kill. You know, he would kind of be talking about kills a lot, and he ended up, you know, having that, having a phrase that was related to, I think it was related to bad kill. And so anytime he said it, it just, we were used to him saying those words. And so it didn't occur, you know, it didn't occur to people for a long time that that could be the Yagababble phrase. I don't remember, you know, how the game turned out. I just remember that specific interaction.
Yeah. I also, something else you said that I wanted to touch on. I think, like, even in in-person games, as a Yagababble, you should, like, feel comfortable arguing with your storyteller about your phrase. Like, they're going to communicate their phrase to you by either online, whether you're doing it in a voice chat or sending you a text message through Discord or the app, they're going to send you your phrase. On in person, they're going to, like, write it down on their phone or a piece of paper and show it to you. Like, tell them no if it's something you don't think you can work with. Like, you can do that in...
I would encourage people to do that as well. You know, be willing to negotiate about your Yagababble phrase so that you can actually, like, stand a chance at being able to say it. Or make sure that the phrasing sounds like something you would actually say. You know, you don't have to passively accept whatever you're given, like a Mazepolis does. You can definitely turn it into something of a discussion and push back a little bit.
But, so, like, I guess I wanted to make the point, like, you have, like, more control over your phrase than you might think you do at first glance.
That's true. And that does also mean, like, that gives more power to the idea of, like, finding more creative ways to working your phrase into the public discussion. Because if you do try to take more control and you do have ideas and you share those with your storyteller, but and you've already pre-thought about how I can get this phrase to sound like it's not a phrase, you know, if you've done that ahead of time, then you have less work to do on your toes.
For sure. Cool. I'm not sure.
I think Yagababble.
Yeah.
I would be happy with a solution that saw Yagababble and Zombul move up and get out of this Fangu Typhon Leech Oho area of demons, because I think that seems right.
Yeah, it works for me too. Got him.
Okay, that is all of our B tier characters.
Indeed.
Time to clean up the C's.
Clean up the C's. All right, so the first thing I'm going to do is talk about Atheist, where I am concerned that my own personal feelings may be influencing where I would rate it strategically. But for me, Atheist is like if you fire up the New York Times and say, you know, I'm going to go do my Wordle for the day. And then you get there and there's a pop-up that says, hey, the word for the day is pilot, by the way. And then somebody asks you, hey, what's your strategy for getting the Wordle in as few guesses as possible today? Your answer is, well, I'm going to type in pilot. So to me, Atheist is the least strategic role of the entire game because it's a good player who starts knowing the answer to the game. And I think that other people maybe agree with that somewhere in their hearts because they give atheists, you know, super secret win conditions that don't actually matter, but it's like, hey, here's something for you to do this game that lets you, like, use your brain and navigate, like, a social situation that's more than, we need to kill the storyteller. I guess you can kill me on day one because if I'm lying about this, then I'd be evil. So you can eliminate that world. And then I'll just tell people to kill the storyteller all game, and I'll see if people, you know, see if I can convince people to do that. For me, that is the lowest possible strategic thing to do, is to start knowing the answer to the puzzle.
When we did the episode with Atheist in it, one of the things we talked about was shunting it into the NA tier just because it's like, I don't know, you know. We felt like that was a cop-out. And some of the things in D tier are just so straightforward in how you have to sort of how you play them that we thought it didn't fit in D tier because, like, there is something to having to convince people that it's an atheist game or to, like, find the bits of the game that sort of make an atheist game. But I wholeheartedly agree with you that knowing the answer from the start is just about the least strategic thing that you could possibly, you know, that you could possibly encounter.
And a counterpoint to myself, perhaps, would be that if the evil team wants to get the storyteller executed at the end of the game and to bluff atheists, then they will need to put in some work for that as far as, you know, the right level of not going overboard and just being cartoonishly pushing atheists, which I've definitely seen before. So if you want to think about that, then maybe it's fine where it is. But I think pulling the atheist token for me is very low strategy.
So I guess the one part I disagree with you is, and I think it's going to be just a minor little disagreement. I don't think it's that big a thing. I don't think the atheist knows the solution at the start of the game.
Oh, okay. That seems like a large disagreement. So I'm excited to hear that.
The solution...
I agree. That sounds large.
The solution at the start of the game is not... The atheist knows you need to kill the storyteller. But that's not the solution. The solution is, how do I convince town that they need to kill the storyteller? And I think that's a small difference. Not the biggest difference in the world, but I think it's enough that I do think there's something going on with the atheist, because your solution, because the atheist does not have the power to kill the storyteller by themselves. Like, this is not ultimately, even for the atheist, a one-player game. This is always a multiplayer game. It's always a game that's ultimately about crafting together a solution with your team. Like, let's imagine a hypothetical character whose ability was, you know who the demon is, if you're mad about the demon being the demon, your team loses, right? That character knows the solution to the game, right? And there's obvious strategy there, because if they share the solution openly with the good team, they lose. Immediately. The demon, they lose. The storyteller can say, game over, you lose. I'm not saying that's a well-designed character concept, but, like, that's a concept of a character that clearly has, I think, strategy. Because the strategy is not sharing who the demon is with... is not, like... The strategy isn't in solving the puzzle. It's solving the logic puzzle. It's solving the social puzzle of how do I get people where they need to be, but without... how do I convince people to go where they need to go? And that's the atheist's job. It's not as dramatic as if you're mad about the solution, you lose, though some storytellers, I think this is not a good idea, and I don't encourage it. Some storytellers have done that to atheists. I don't think it's fun for the atheists. I don't think it's fun for the other players. But you know the solution you need to convince town to go to. You don't know the path of how to get them there. And that's the atheist thing to discover. That's the thing to discover. That's where they need to apply strategy.
And it's heavily social, right? Like, it's all in social play and trying to convince people that, you know, this world that's been constructed that looks like it has a demon in it doesn't have a demon.
I think those are all very fair points, and I don't disagree with them, but I do want to point out that some aspect of it is dependent on your storyteller and how they are running atheist, because if you have running, like atheist as a puzzle, and they've actually constructed, like, a mechanically fairly straightforward game, then all of those things are definitely true, and they apply. If you're having somebody who's doing something very silly or outlandish or truly wild, then it goes back to kind of being no strat, because the storyteller's proving it for you and you don't have to do anything. But that's not really something that the atheist player themselves can control.
And most of the time when
you
see that, it's like it's being done on a stream as like a, you know, a, hey, let's do this stupid, fun, silly thing. You know, it's almost a non-game. You know, it's just like a performative sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think atheists could ultimately stay. It's just a point I wanted to get
out
there.
I think it's a really fair point, Molly.
Yeah, like, I think it's a really good point.
We could have thrown it in an NA and just, you know, copped out.
I think it's a point that ignored that the atheist does have something they need to solve, even though they know who the demon is.
Yeah, figuring out how to convince people that it is an atheist game. One of the reasons, by the way, I don't think atheist matches up particularly well with drunk. I don't particularly like having atheist and drunk on the same script with one another, is I don't think it's a more interesting puzzle for the atheist to have to convince town when there's also a drunk on script. Like, I don't think drunk atheist is that compelling as compared to an atheist having to not look like an evil player. Because the storyteller in an atheist game is going to go out of their way to make that atheist look like an evil player. At least in a straight-up script, you know?
All right, you want to take next, Navian?
Yeah, I'll keep it on a quicker one with courtier. So if we're talking about courtier within the context of BMR only, I think that it is perfectly fine where it's at. I have no issues with it being a C tier. But I do think it's worth pointing out that when you take courtier off of BMR and you start bringing it into customs, there are in particular outsiders that can give it a lot more interesting things to do. So it might be worth considering reevaluating courtier in its place off of BMR. But if you don't want to do that, then I will also accept that it belongs in C tier.
Certainly C tier on BMR, right? Like, it just has an objectively clean play pattern that you just basically always do. You know, in mm-hmm. terms of, like, yeah, if it's on a damsel script and you can, like, courtier drunk the damsel, there's interesting stuff that can happen. Even as a bluff for evil, like, courtier drunking a mutant is a lot like Philo's going mutant. You know, so there's certainly some other play there that you can do with outsiders that's at least interesting, if not, you know, if not specifically effective.
Like, but, like, at the same time, like, so the classic, like, courtier damsel script is Harold Holt's Revenge, right? The well-played, the frequently played Leviathan script out of the Australian community, where, like, the courtier is just supposed to pick damsel every time that game.
I don't think that's a great example because it's just also on a solo Leviathan script, so I don't think that's the best example of
I know,
courtier.
But, like,
like, on a custom.
It's so hard to, like, it's, it, like, creating a courtier script where there isn't, like, a correct choice is so hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it's...
Yeah, but that was for the script notes script building discussion. This is...
Well, yeah.
This is about something else.
Every time I find a courtier on BMR or the Wild, I'm like, there is a choice I'm supposed to make here. I can make a different choice because it's funny, but it's not the choice I'm supposed to make. Like, am I really making a choice?
Yeah, I mean, damsel is a very valid choice, and I have actually seen a courtier choosing damsel help a good team win the game. Courtier choosing heretic is a really interesting option, potentially. I'm not saying that there's a lot of other characters outside of BMR that courtier has interesting interactions with, but I do think that it is slightly more strategic value outside of BMR. Which is not the same thing as saying that it's easy to write the script that it actually has that in. It is very difficult to write that script, but it does exist.
This reminds me of the fact that I've committed myself to whenever I play Martian Vampires, that script, and I draw courtier, I'm always going to choose Saint immediately, because Saints on the script are always like, hey guys, I'm the Saint, let's execute me and see if it's a heretic game. And I want to have that happen in the game continue. It would be so good.
I'll grant that courtier is more interesting off of BMR with certain, like, there's certain tools and things. If you'll grant that, that doesn't necessarily lift it out of C tier.
Sure. I mean, I think it maybe can raise it to a slightly higher C tier than it exists on when it's, like, only being evaluated
That's
within
reasonable.
BMR.
C.5.
Yeah. C.5.
Yeah.
God, I just...
Yeah, Emma's disdain for
this. I like, so like, a few years ago at this point, Zets or Lachlan, who was like someone who's been involved with Clock Tower since, like, essentially it started. He's an Australian who was, like, like, he streamed and ran a version of BMR as it existed in 2016, and, like, BMR used to have the preacher, and there's a note on Lachlan's version of the 2016 BMR that says, maybe we replace it with Courtier. Courtier actually works on this script. That note is the single most insane thing that's ever come out of the of TPI and their Clock Tower design process. Courtier has never worked. It was wrong. It should have stayed Preacher on BMR. It should have been thrown in the aisle of misfit toys like Rogue and the other thing and fucking and what's it called? Barrow Fog and it, they and Skinkulous, and it should never have seen the goddamn light of day.
Look, the demons need to have something to bluff on BMR. Why not Courtier?
Oh god, how many times have I taken a Courtier bluff? Oh, it's too many. But maybe this time the storyteller actually put it in the bag. Oh no. Okay.
There was a really funny game on Viva La Sam stream when literally the entire evil team bluffed Courtier, and my kill all Courtier's rally cry has never been more apt. Okay, well, next up, I wanted to talk about Spy for at least a little bit. I don't think I'm going to say anything about Spy that we don't know, but I do feel like it was perhaps dismissed a little bit in the tier list discussion. I think we all know probably a few people who think that, you know, Spy is actually the character with uncapped potential because you could do anything when you see the grim. The world is your oyster. And I think we can all agree, probably, we all feel that that is an exaggeration. But I do think that when you have a spy in the game, especially on night one, that they can look for specific things to do, like who to put investigator pings on, who to put fortune teller pings on, to maybe bluff who in the evil team should bluff empath. If somebody's next to a recluse, then that could be, you know, an above average sort of bluff to be to come out with empath one pretty quickly next to the recluse. That usually makes people think you look pretty good. Maybe one of the evil team needs to bluff recluse because they're in some sort of ping that's the demon next to the empath who's real, and you need to let them know that, you know, recluse is a really good claim for you this game to at least maybe survive till a star pass or something like that. And that's just something, those are choices that you can make that the evil team wouldn't otherwise have. Maybe they put their investigator pick on like a washroom and confirmed player and look super suspicious because storytellers just refuse to actually ever do that. So I do think it gives you, especially like right out of the gate, it gives you more juice to look to make your whole evil team potentially look good, and not just you, because that's usually the problem with spies, that you can make yourself look good and then that can get your demon killed. But you can like figure out a narrative to make the rest of your evil team look good too, with specific bluffs and specific pings on specific players, and that is, I think, enough to raise it a tier for me. But don't know what y'all think.
We wanted to differentiate it from Widow to an extent. I think it's also, you know, it does all its work right up front. Even in your formulation of Spy, right, Molly? Like, it does all its work up front. The seeing the grim repetitively ability is almost always meaningless. You know, seeing the grim on later days is pretty low value. Like, if you get stuck in the spiral of, like, the demon keeps picking the monk protect and the monk protect's moving around, like, you're not gonna chase that down. Once the demons hit the monk protect, mm-hmm. you're pretty screwed anyway. So, like, All of the value of Spy knowing the grim is front loaded, and the effect of like maybe being able to look good yourself, as you mentioned, it can get your imp killed. Somebody shared a TB grim on our server the other day, which I thought was a fine TB grim, but the empath seeing the spy as good immediately puts the demon in like a very limited space on the grim, which is, you know, again, tricky, and often spies should just register as evil rather than registering as good. You know, they have the ability, if they do register as good, to catch the star pass, but, you know, all of those are like The spy has a bunch of, like, half abilities, is the problem with the spy, right? Like, it has a bunch of, like, semi-useful things that it could do, but it doesn't, like, its whole coherent, like, effect is so limited that even the ability to, like, go day one, go to the whole evil team, give them all the grim information, like, give them the ability to plot out all the kills, to pick the perfect bluffs, to... I've never seen a spy giving the demon the grim and having the evil team, like, pick the perfect set of kills to make, the perfect poisonings. I've never really seen that, like, substantively change a game to the point where... to the point where it's really making... like, it gives evil an advantage, certainly, but I'm not sure it's making... I'm not sure it's making the evil team win more. And crucially, I'm still not sure how strategic it is to just go, okay, guys, here's the Grimm. Now we know the Grimm, and we're going to make the, like, objectively obvious choices based on the Grimm that we have. I don't know. It's hard. There's also a lot of traps.
I think you're limiting the spy because that's all you see what getting the Grimm should be, and that's just not... the case. Like, I disagree with you that that knowing the Grimm is like a front-loaded thing, because having the Grimm and passing that on to the evil team is very different from what you can do once you have the Grimm. There's all kinds of different ways you can choose to play it, and there's, I'm not going to say that there's no cap on, like, how to go about doing that, because there probably exists one, but, like, I think that spy is one of those, like, low floor, high ceiling. The low floor is you get the Grimm and you give it to your poisoner, your demon, whatever, and they just, like, make the quote-unquote right choices. That's the low floor. The high ceiling is when you start doing really creative things, when you're picking and choosing who's confirming whom and in what way and when to start to look evil and, you know, those kinds of things. When to start to look evil when you're believed to be good with or at least aligned with a specific other player because you are able to register as good. I think there's a lot more to the strategy that you can do once you have the Grimm. The problem is that not a lot of people know what to do with that or how to do it.
Yeah, and I can add real quick that... I agree that when the strategy of having the Grimm is, I'll kill the fortune teller on night two, I'll kill the monk on night three, and then I'm alive at the end of the game, claiming ongoing information. It's weird because everybody thinks it's a spy game. That gets spy solidly rooted in the C tier. But what I think it has better upside to do is to insert the evil team into the information landscape in a way that makes them look better, like by being able to have evil pings on something like a recluse, or being able to push on, you know, a soldier or a raven keeper more effectively by identifying them for their, you know, the fake fortune teller or fake investigator info. And so to not needing to worry about the problems with night killing those roles. I think that's where it shines and can do better than C.
I guess, like, yeah, and the spy's ability helps you do those things, but you're already trying to do those things as evil players, right? Like, the spy just, like, gives you a heads up and saying who the recluse is and then passing it to your demon, but, you know, the poisoner can do that day one, too. I don't know.
The poisoner can do that day one if they get lucky or players aren't lying. The spy can do that every time it's in play, if it wanted.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's fair that it helps you execute strategy more effectively, as opposed to
creating its own.
Creating new strategy? I don't know. That's an interesting question.
That's a hard question, and I think, you know, like, when you sit down to play the spy, right, so let's think about it just from the seat of the player who's got the spy token. Like, what are you doing? You're giving information to your team, collaborating with your team to, like, come up with a strategy potentially of what you're going to do. But, you know, there's not that much choice that you're going to pick a bluff, but again, minions always pick bluffs. You're going to pick a more informed bluff, so you're bluffing better. But I don't know how much choice you're making there. I don't know how much strategy is involved you know, it's it, and it's not the same as your point about atheist earlier, Molly, but to some extent it's like, how much more strategic are your choices, like, knowing everything? Like, are your choices, in fact, this is a weird thing, but like, are your choices, like, more prescriptive, or do they feel more prescriptive when you know everything? I'm not sure. It's an interesting question. I don't know.
That I think is just. Like. I definitely think the answer to whether it looks more or less prescriptive is a matter of like a personal approach to the role. Because to me, it's less prescriptive, for sure.
Yeah, and then it just in terms of tiering, the other question is like, I don't think spy is as strategically interesting as widow. So like moving it up to B tier is.
I think I disagree, but how do I say this? I think I agree that Widow belongs above Spy because it has the option of poisoning, and many of the things that we're talking about with the Spy involve its first ability of being able to see the Grim. But I do think that Spy, like, the second ability of the Spy, which is that they might register as good, can and should factor into how you play the spy strategically as well. You don't have control over where and when it happens, although, again, you should consider talking to your storyteller and say, hey, I'm going to make this play. When this thing happens, can you register me as evil to this character here? Consider doing that more often so that you can actually be involved in the strategy of where and when to register you as evil. So, for example, you're framing somebody next to the empath, you know, and but like not your demon, because like, yes, definitely there's problems with spy where if you look too good, it can make your demon look evil. Some of that is because you haven't strategically made the choice to do things like confirm your demon when maybe you should have, because the information is making you look ultra good. And if you're saying that you have information that makes that player ultra good, then that's how you protect the demon rather than, you know, trying to like push on other people is evil as much, right? So like making those choices between when do you try to confirm your fellow evils or get yourself so confirmed that you know, once you catch like a star pass or something, you're good, versus when to do things like push on other players as evil instead of trying to clear your evil team. Those are all options that I think people don't think about
enough.
It's
an on TB, off TB thing as well, where, you know, on TB, a lot of things happen night one. And so, like, the effectiveness of, like, you kind of trying to get the storyteller to show you is good or evil, you know, it's basically you just, like, playing against the empath, mostly, on TB. But maybe off TB, maybe, like, with something like Village Idiots or, you know, other roles, you know, things that see, like, King seeing a role in play, you know, when the spy's in, you know, there's some other things that can happen off TB, maybe that elevates spy a little bit more in terms of using that second part of the ability, which I still think is like the most interesting part of the spy ability. Just don't know how it, you know, just because it's passive, it often is difficult to kind of rate it strategically.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think that's definitely fair, but I also think, you know, maybe get involved with your storyteller more.
I will say, I think there's one particular character combo that makes spy like possibly S tier in terms of strategic depth, and that's the combination of spy and cannibal, where suddenly as the spy you can set up the most bonkers possible plans and see if your storyteller will go along with them.
that's fun. Yeah.
I just like, I like my nine sticking point with spy always is the spy can sometimes be better at doing the social things that evil teams want to be doing already, right? Like, nothing about this, getting accurate reads on players, getting your information to align with good players' information, knowing when you want to be seen as evil as a minion, when you want to be seen as good. These are, like, vanilla minion does this, right? A vanilla minion wants all those things, right? If there was just a minion whose ability was, you have no ability, go have fun, it would be trying to do all those things it's not as good at doing them as the spy because they don't get to see the groom. They can't ever actually mechanically register as good. But those are just the things minions want to be doing. Like that. So that's always my hang up with the spy, and to a lesser degree, the widow. I don't actually remember why Widow is ahead of Spy. I don't actually see much of a difference between these two characters. But, like, I don't know. Like, it's, they're very tough characters for me to separate out my personal distaste for them. With, and like disappointment when I see these tokens with whether they have more going on for them than I want to give them credit for.
I will say that
similar to Molobok's thing about Atheist.
I will say, and yeah, and I kind of agree with that. I do think that if these are the two tokens I have a choice of like seeing, I would always rather see Widow because I think the strategic interaction of like what it's like to play in a game with a widow, with a widow's call in it, is always more interesting for evil. Whereas the sort of the spy thing of like wanting to be hidden versus the widow's thing of just being outed, I think that's what makes them distinctly different. And having the widow having to play in an environment where people potentially know that one person is poisoned, trying to figure out who the poisoned person is, trying to figure out, you know, sharing information in a widow game, what's to share, how much to share. I think from my seat, I'm always more interested in that puzzle than the spy's puzzle of trying to sort of look good. But, you know, I think they're difficult characters to rank, and it's possible that they're very similar. It might be that spy belongs up a tier in B tier because there is more to it than what we gave it. All right,
Navy, you're up next.
Yeah, I think the rest of the characters are mine. There's only two more. I'll keep my perhaps more controversial one for last, I guess. So we'll go with Banshee then. So I think that your assessment of Banshee has pretty drastically undervalued the impact having two votes can have on a game, especially in the earlier game. I don't disagree with anything you said about the strategy that you did talk about when you were rating Banshee. I just don't agree fully with it either, because that's just, it doesn't just have to be, you know, okay, how do I say this? When you look at it with the goal in mind of my job is to be able to nominate at the end of the game, it is definitely true that you can do that whether you are alive or dead. I can't contest that, right? So I think where you actually need to look at for Banshee is what does having the extra vote do? And not only an extra vote, but an extra vote every single day, because you are not using your dead vote when you are voting. You can do this all the time. A lot of the times, executions come down to the difference between one vote, you know, one vote, like people drop so that they can avoid a tie. But if you had both of your hands up, well, now it's decreased the odds of a tie. You know, it means that other people won't be dropping, or it might mean that another dead player doesn't have to use their dead vote to put somebody that you really want on the block. Because you have those two, that's not using up anything. So I think there's actually a lot more impact, and as a result, a lot more things to think about of your own votes. And also, you don't have to vote twice as a dead Banshee, right? You can vote only once. And I think trying to sort out when you might differentiate between when you might want to vote once versus when you might want to vote twice is an interesting question. Perhaps not like the most interesting question, but it is something that I think is worth thinking about as a banshee, because that can maybe signal to other players as well, like how strongly you feel about something. Like, I'm willing to put one vote on this person because I'm not sure about this world, but maybe it's worth clearing, versus I'm putting both my hands up, let's kill this person. Like, they're definitely evil and I want them dead. So yeah, I think you're just largely devaluing the impact having two votes can have. And again, especially in the earlier game when more evils are alive and it might be, harder to get the full amount of votes that you need. But also even potentially in the later game too, if the good team has not done well with killing evils and they do need to start considering using dead votes, they have to use less of those if you are dead in the night. So I think Banshee deserves to go up, because two votes repeatedly is kind of a lot of power.
Yeah, it's power, but it's definitely like power. I think the Banshee's super strong. And you can certainly signal different things with the one vote or the two votes, but it's definitely power.
I think that one of the things that, you two talked about was like, I'm not going to play this as much like I am any of the other bait roles, because I just want to be alive at the end. I want to be able to nominate at the end of the game, and I can do that dead or alive, and I can force evil to try to
Yeah.
vote with, like deal with me. And like, that's a valid strategy. I'm not going to say that it's not, but I think you approach it with such a level of blasé as if like it's maybe not even worth trying as a banshee to play it like your other bait roles and get yourself killed early. And I simply disagree with that. I think the amount of things that you can do with having two votes when you're in the early to mid game is pretty important. And like, it can drastically change the shape of the game.
That is true, but like, I guess my concern, my problem still is like, the virtue of the Banshee either being dead or alive. Like, if the Banshee's alive, if the Banshee is alive instead of dead, all those things of having the extra vote are valued just slightly less because there's less need for the good team to maybe start using their dead votes earlier than they'd like to. There's less need for them to be worried about an all evil wipeout of the good team. And the Banshee knows all this because
Okay, but it's not true in the same way, because a player of one who has one vote is not the same as a player who has two votes. Like,
right, but
this is a pretty big
The
difference.
value of the two votes is reduced by the fact that there's one more good player alive.
I disagree. I think that you're way undervaluing the value of those two votes. Like,
I think there's like a risk reward like proposition here that's difficult to sort, right? On the one hand, the Banshee gets more powerful. Like we'll all agree that the Banshee is more powerful, like as a player that die, like if the Banshee dies night two, the demon kills the Banshee night two, that's very strong for the good team. That's a dead vote that's not being wasted every day, and an extra vote as well. And also, like you don't have to you at least you've taken away the possibility of like a TPK situation where like good can still nominate in the end. So that's like very, 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 very strong, right? The question is how much value that has as a strategy, as compared to like the other Demon Banes, as compared to like just being honest about being the Banshee and like going, okay, evil team, do you want to give us two votes or do you want to just leave a good player alive till the end of the game?
I guess like my risk of being the as being of being the Banshee of being executed is by because I'm being shift because I'm lying, right? The risk of lying is more severe for the Banshee than it is for the Raven Keeper. In the same way, it's more severe for the soldier than it is for the Raven Keeper. Because the Banshee and the soldier are preventing evil winds by their by default, and the Raven Keeper isn't. Like, and I like for me, that's why I'm less interested in going for the bait kill. Like, the cost of me dying as being executed as a Banshee or a soldier is much higher than it is as being a Raven Keeper or a farmer.
I will say, sorry.
I mean, like, that may be true, but I still think that that has little to do with the valuing of the two votes.
And I will say, to Navian's point, at least in part, the risk, like the risk reward, like the risk reward choice still exists here. It's not gone here, right? It's just that the risk side is so much risky. Like, what you stand to lose is so much riskier. What you stand to gain is also so much greater. It's like, it's almost like you just take the soldier and like stretch it in both directions. Like, it's so much worse for the good team for a Banshee to be executed, but it's so much better for the good team for the Banshee to be killed in the night. You know, it's like as if the risk reward proposition for soldier is just like stretched out in both directions. Like, a soldier dies and you like you've lost the soldier's ability to prevent evil win in the end game, but like fundamentally, you know, you've just lost that player and sort of that, you know, that protection. The Banshee, you've lost, like, to Navian's point again, like those extra votes, which are really strong, the evil proofing the end game to an extent because of the nominations. So like there is something there. I hear what Navy is trying to say, and I recognize the differentiation that they want in terms of like this tier, whether that brings Banshee up to B tier as compared to Soldier and Sage being very clearly in C tier. I don't know.
Yeah, but I also like want to talk about the fact that like what you do with your votes when you do have them is a strategy thing, right? It's not just, oh, I have the power. It is there's strategy involved in where and when to use those two votes.
Yeah,
I'll concede that.
that's fair. I think that's right. I just look, most people don't play Banshee the way I do, of just being like, yeah, I'm the Banshee, do what you want with me, evil team. Most people are gonna try for the bait kill. So I'm certainly a minoritarian view in that the bait kill for the Banshee is less valuable than it seems. And like the value of a publicly confirmed good player with extreme voting power is definitely something, and the use of those two votes as a publicly confirmed good player is also something quite powerful.
I've slid it up into B tier in acknowledgement of its the challenges, at least, of talking about it on this particular video. Because I do think it's an interesting question to ask. And I genuinely don't think, you know, is this another C.5 situation? Does it fully belong into like a B tier? Is it even higher than that? I genuinely don't know. I haven't pulled it enough times and haven't played through it enough times, and maybe that's one where it deserves some more experimentation. Weirdly, I don't see it on that many scripts still, which is a bit odd.
I mean, it's a wonky character that's difficult to make work, right? Like, gets to the script building question, where,
Yeah, it can be. It's difficult to script right for.
like, you can't really use it with an Odashi, because then the Nodashi can get outed by killing the Banshee, which isn't fun for anyone. You can't really use it, like, you can use it with a Poisoner, but, like, that can be feels bad.
I do want to just add a little something to this. Like, you've already moved it up, which is great. But I do want to say that like the reason Butler got so high on the tier list has a lot to do with like voting and voting strategies and paying attention to voting. And then Banshee doesn't get that level of like strategy added onto it, despite the fact that its entire ability is also about like voting and what to do with voting, and I thought that felt a little weird. And kind of maybe the butler's love and the banshee's meh-ness impacting how that conversation impacted the tier of rating for these characters.
It's clear that I love the banshee. I think the banshee is so much fun. I think it's one of the most fun characters to story tell.
That's fair.
I think it's one of the most fun characters to be. Like, dying as the banshee at night is definitely super fun. I just remain, like, not super convinced it advances Good's team's goals as much as it seems. As much as not being executed does.
I retract my second point, but my first point still stands, that if you have a character that's so high on the tier list because it's all about voting, voting patterns, paying attention to voting, and another character that is also all about voting and what you can discern from voting and what you can do with voting, it just feels weird to have them
that's fair.
So separated from each other.
I, like, the Banshee doesn't have the linked voting aspect to it, though, right?
Yeah, it does. It's done its thing on its own. And it, in a sense, like...
yeah, its own thing being that it has two votes.
It has unique power to overcome something that Banshee player feels is off about how things
but
are
But it also today. Has yeah. the unique power to amplify people's mistakes.
Very true.
Well, that's definitely true, but I'm not actually sure... how much players are capable of making mistakes into talking about strategy.
It amplifies like misreads or like, you know, reading the grim wrong or whatever. You know, it can have that. It can have that negative effect as well. But I concur that having more votes is more power, like straight up, and that maybe we downranked it a little bit for, you know. Because we think the play pattern is more straightforward than it necessarily has to be.
Or at least I do. I don't think Vilk is as convinced as I am.
Yeah, I'm torn on Demon Banes. I like playing them in a lot of different ways, and I don't think that you have to play them the same way every time. But I do think like the risk-reward proposition on Banshee, it's much more compelling to me to play Banshee the way Emma suggests. I tend to be a riskier player. So I tend to be willing to take the risk.
I will agree can move up to at least B. Like, the advantage of the Banshee dying at night over the soldier in terms of the evil doesn't get to win condition is in so far as the Banshee gets confirmed as the Banshee and the soldier still gets executed on final thing. So that does put some more value on the Banshee actually getting killed.
I will make one note before we get to our last character, because our last character is a C character. We don't have any D characters, but I wanted to note that we talked about a D character. We talked about maybe the organ grinder should be higher. We discussed all these reasons and things we thought an organ grinder could do. And then we sat back and we looked at this list and we realized together, wait a minute, these are all things the old organ grinder can do and not the new one. Like, you know, choices in how much heat you can put on yourself, how much you can frame somebody else as the organ grinder, when you might want to get killed and turn it off. It's like, these are all the old organ grinder. They murdered all the strategy from the new one. It's so sad.
I know.
Yeah, please insert the meme here about look how they massacred my boy.
There's people... All right, so, like, I can't help but rant about Organ Grinder, even though I know I shouldn't. Like, there's people who hate the Organ Grinder, hated the old Organ Grinder, hate the new Organ Grinder, and, like, openly gloat about this change because it made Organ Grinder even less popular. And so there's that group. And then there's the people who try to insist to me that new Organ Grinder has strategic value. Some of them even, like, are people who I respect with the game in other ways. But I just don't understand. I just can't comprehend. What, like... sitting there 5 days without an ability so you can surprise the good team with a final three Organ Grinder in the event you weren't executed for being evil before then? I just don't
understand.
Spoiler
alert, you're going to get executed. Yeah.
I just don't understand.
Well, sure, it works so well for the psychopath that surely it will also work for the Organ Grinder.
at least if the psychopath does manage to pull off this so-called strategy, at least they get the win out of it, for whatever that's worth.
The organ grinder still
the has organ grinder doesn't even guarantee themselves the win. They just guarantee themselves that people are surprised.
Yep. You know, we can't even get viziers who are known by everybody to push through executions. Like, it's so sad what they've done to organ grinder.
Yeah, poor monkey.
Okay, but we do have one actual last character.
This might be the most controversial for this particular podcast, and it's Harpy. Because this is a character that I know Emma does not like, and isn't going to like what I'm about to say. So when you rated Harpy, you talked a lot about how easy it is to comply with the madness. And I think that that is not a correct way to evaluate the strategy of a character. That is about its relative strength as a character. And I can certainly agree that Harpy is definitely not the strongest minion when it comes to that kind of thing. You know, its madness is easier to comply with than Serenova's, generally speaking, and is less damaging than the Serenovus has the potential to be. So I'm not saying, you know, that it deserves to be, like, on a particularly high tier level, or it's definitely not, like, at the level of the other madness minion. But how easy or difficult it is to comply with the madness, I think, is not actually very much to do with its strategy. Strategies for the Harpy are, who am I picking? When am I picking them? And when am I going to pick an evil player and have them flagrantly break madness in order to get kills? When am I picking a good player and an evil player and trying to convince them to break their own madness about the evil player to get kills? When am I picking two good players and trying to convince the good player to break madness on the other good player and get kills? I think there's some interesting things that can be done with Harpy that are probably just not being explored very much, because everybody gets stuck on the idea of Harpy is not that difficult to comply with. And also some of that is a factor of storytellers being too light-handed with it. This is true of Serenovus as well, but I think Harpy suffers more for it.
Yeah.
And so people are not being, like, they're not willing to explore those things because they feel sort of like, well, what's the point? But I think that those things are there.
That's probably fair. And just for the record, I have tried to explore Harpy's face. I've written entire scripts around letting the Harpy bluff as a psychopath. But...
And weirdly, I've been your Harpy guinea pig several times, like, in games. And I don't know if it's bad luck or it's just things just, but it just never seems to, like, the choices I make never seem to have an impact on the game. That doesn't mean that the choices aren't strategic. That doesn't mean that I'm not really thinking about what I'm trying to do. That doesn't mean I'm not, again, what Navian suggested, strongly encourage, if you're playing Harpy, you know, try to think about using it to get a kill, like intentionally to get a kill. It's hard because a lot of times you have to out evil to do that. But you can also, like, adjust, like, final threes. Like, you can adjust the final number sometimes. Like, there's things you can do with it. But for whatever reason, and whether it's my bad luck in situations or, you know, the choices that I make with it, regardless of how much strategy I feel like I've put into the character, what I get out of the character, like, what I get out of the strategic choices of Harpy, doesn't ever seem to meaningfully change games.
Sorry, David.
Okay. I'm glad Emma disagrees, because I also, like, I can't disagree with Milk's, like, lived experience. He's just simply reporting it to us. But, you know, I've seen Harpies that have effectively gotten kills that have pretty dramatically impacted. There was a game at one of the, Molly, you might remember which one it was, whether it was last year. I think it was last year's con in DC, where Ryback was a Harpy who got himself and a chambermaid killed at a pretty important point in the game. And Evil ended up winning, I think, in part because it took out that chambermaid at a crucial point. So, like, it definitely can have impact, but I can't dispute that sometimes it doesn't, and sometimes that's just, like, an unfortunate side effect of a storyteller who's not strong-handed enough or just luck of the game. But I guess an important question to ask is, how much does the impact of the strategy matter for the strategic depth that we are looking at here? Because you're admitting that with Harpy, you're putting a lot of strategic thought into it. You're simply not getting out what you're expecting. So is the result something that factors into its tier list placement, or is that something that should be considered separately because that has to do with the character's strength but not necessarily their strategy?
Super fair question.
I think those are super fair questions. I did want to just put it to say, I am going to disagree with Vilk's lived experiences. Vilk is wrong about his lived experiences. I have,
okay, that's fair.
I have seen Milk dramatically impact the odds of his team, the evil team, winning through choices he's made as the Harpy. In fact, I could cite a specific example because it happened, like, a week ago. Which is, we were playing, actually, I was running your game, your script, Bird Violence. And it was, like, it was a game where it was relatively clear who the demon was, but not clear if they were a Vortox or a leech. And Milk made the correct strategic choice of making himself mad at someone going into Final Four, and then breaking madness to prevent the good team from testing his demon to see whether they were the Leech or the Vortox. Now, did they eventually make the right choice between that? Yes. But he changed the game from a certain loss to close to a 50-50 proposition by using the Harpy strategically. So I am going to dispute Milk's lived experience.
That's, I mean, that's fair.
You're right, and Mullabach and I did watch that, and now that you were recounting it, I remember
this
that.
This is all just a ploy to make Emma say something nice about me, actually, so that's actually what happened.
Oh, okay. You know, you've really committed to the bit by having us come on here for like 2.5 hours for this.
Got him!
I want to add to Harpy, too, that when I am Harpy mad, I will play it the way that I kind of wish storytellers would run it, where if I if it's night one, I will put an evil ping on the person. If it's past night one and I've already claimed like a non-info role to people, I'll come up with like a social or voting reason why somebody's evil. If I'm an ongoing info role, I'll like make up the info later in the time. Like, I've put as the puzzle master, I've lied and said that the person I was harsh mad about is my puzzle master guest. Let's say I got like a village idiot on evil on somebody. And I think a lot of people do feel like, well, you don't actually have to do that. You can just say, well, this person seems shady, but I'll bet they're minions. Let's go after the demon and just like brush it off. But I am relatively successful, for better or worse, at getting people executed when I play it the way I think it should be played. And I wish storytellers would encourage more. So I think there is a thing of, storytellers have been letting Saradova's mad people get away with murder since for many years, and Harpy has the exact same thing. But and I think it's possible to get to a place where it has more impact, and Harpy mad pushes that people are evil are less solved and more dangerous. But it might not be the world we live in, but I think the potential is there.
It's a disinformation.
At least.
Oh, I. Listen, if the four of us continue modeling the behavior, then maybe other people will pick up on it and also start running a Harpy better.
Like, it's also, like, part of it is, like, part of the Harpy's problem, and this isn't really into the strategy aspect anymore, it's into meta stuff, it's people have been letting bullshit slide with the Harpy since the day it was released. Because they've been used to letting bullshit slide with the Saranovas for years. Which is, like, if you're going to change your claim on SNV because you're Saranovas mad, it's not enough just to say, oh, I was lying yesterday when I was hard claiming to everyone that I was the artist who used my question and asked, is this player the pit hag, and got a yes. Like, it's not enough to say, that was all a lie, I'm actually the flower girl who has no information about potential pit hags. I was trying to bait a kill. Like you have to have a convincing explanation for why you're changing your claim as a Serenovus Mad player, or you are definitely liable to be executed, but no one treats it that way. No one holds Serenovus Mad players accountable to, like, what they have to do. At Final 3 Con this year, I don't remember if it was Ed or John I was talking to about Serenovus Madness. Probably Ed, because my conversations with John were much shorter. Or maybe it was me watching Ed on Sam's hard claim panel, and I've just meshed this into my head. It's one of these three things. Where whoever this person was, and it's probably Ed, was like, the reason you shouldn't be claiming hard claiming day one on SNV is, as even as a townsfolk, is it will get you executed if you're Serenovus Mad day three and you've been hard claiming day one and day two. There's nothing you can do to come back from that point. Which is, like, you see people try to get away with Harpy Madness with the biggest bullshit in the world. You see people do stuff like, oh, this player is my other minion with me. And they say, well, I'm saying they're evil, so I'm complying with the words of Harpy Madness.
That sounds familiar.
You have people on day one saying, this person is evil, but they're just a minion, and it's day one, so we should be killing demon candidates. No one gives a shit about making sure the person you're executing is a demon candidate on day one. Like, if you're Harpy Mad on day one, I want to expect you to vote on the player you're Harpy Mad against, because there's very little reason on day one not to vote for a player you think is evil. There's practically none.
In fact, there's a lot of incentive to vote for it, because there's so many votes needed to get that person on the block.
Yeah, like, and so maybe, like, I'm just so frustrated by, like, the fact, and for Serenovus too, to a degree, like, I'm so frustrated with how Madness is run, how Madness is treated, and, like, also how Harpies and Serenovuses play it, like, that I want these characters to be duller than they actually are, to make it so I don't have to try to pretend that I like them. I want them to work. I can think all these things. I've said these things. I've said these before. But when you kill the player who's Harpy Mad by saying, we're both minions together, isn't that fun? They feel bad because they don't think they were breaking Harpy Madness because no one punishes that sort of behavior. And they can say, well, I'm literally complying with the rules. I don't know. That's my Harpy rant.
No, I completely agree with you. And to be honest, I run into this with Serenovus as well. So, like, as you said, it was a problem that started with Serenovus, and it has simply trickled down into Harpy, who is also a Madness minion with a consequence. And I, like, regularly still get players who question my choice to execute them. They'll be like, you know, I included it in my twos. It's like, okay, you were giving twos. That alone is enough for me to execute you. Like, what are your storytellers doing that you think that that's complying with Madness well enough? You're not only giving it in twos, but you're saying, and if I am this role, I'm not giving out my information yet. Like, no, that's not good enough. That will never be good enough. But I still have people who will, like, they take issue with the fact that I've executed them. And like, it's not to say that storytellers are infallible. You can miss things, you can make mistakes, you can make a call that is maybe a bit questionable. I have certainly seen storytellers make questionable execution calls before, usually in the face of, like, an evil player getting executed, but, you know, that's, like, a bit of a different discussion. But, like, the amount of players who think that it's okay mid-game to push back against that and then sort of almost get, like, meta confirmed because of, like, how upset they are or whatever, it's just like, you know, if you take issue with what the storyteller has done, give yourself a little bit of space from the event itself. Like, wait until after the game is over, right? And then, you know, that gets you out of the immediate feelings of upset of, oh, I didn't think that I broke Madness, so why was I executed? It makes you less confrontational, less aggressive. And instead, you can approach the storyteller with, like, a more sort of, even-toned, okay, I'm curious about why you executed me there, and actually listen to their explanation, instead of it being an immediate knee-jerk pushback of, well, I didn't think that I broke Madness. Like, okay, but also, like both of those things are true kind of almost separately from each other, is that like, you know, sometimes players may not have understood, and it's totally within their right to try to understand that better, but wait till after the game. But also, a lot of people have been getting away with so much bullshit. You can't just like claim really vague things and refuse to give out information and not push on things and expect that that's good enough. So storytellers who are listening, please think about the things that we are talking about here and the impact that they've had on these characters that actually have a lot of potential to them, and you're not allowing those characters to meet their potential. So please consider that, you know, in the future when you are encountering madness minions. Thank you.
I think that we give like the instruction of like, okay, well, what's madness? Well, madness means genuinely trying to convince people of the thing you're mad about, right? So you genuinely have to try to convince them. And part of genuinely convincing people should be having to build a legitimate, believable world, whether that's with other people's information, whether that's with information you think is wrong, right? Whether that's pushing back against like the kind of publicly agreed upon worlds, you know, that you might also agree with, whether that's pushing back against your information. I think a lot of people think it's very clever to sort of be able to use madness to sort of seed their own real information into things. And, you know, fundamentally, if you're genuinely convincing someone that it's true on day three that you were the artist for the last 2 days, but you are now the barber, that's probably going to require you to convince people that a pit hag is in play, even if your artist information rules out that there's a pit hag in play. And that means you probably need to create a Vortox world, or you need to create a world where one of your neighbors is an Odashi, or where your dead neighbor is a Vigor Mortis, or a Vigor Mortis killed minion, rather. You know, like, you have to think beyond that first layer of, like, what you genuinely convincing people that, oh yeah, I just lied for 2 days that I was the artist, I'm actually the barber. That's not genuinely trying to convince someone, because it doesn't interact with the mechanics of the game. Like, you told us a lie for 2 days about being the artist with this very specific information about being no pit hag, and actually, like, you know, what's going on? Or, you know, whatever. So I think it's, like, really important that people understand that genuinely convincing someone of something means that you need to build a coherent world. It doesn't mean you can just say, oh, I just got a bad vibe off of that person in a conversation. Nope, you've got a ping on that person, or you heard of a ping on that person, or, you know, whatever it is, you know, you need to construct that world that works. Did we do it? Did we reach the end?
I think we did it.
We did.
Wow. Well, this is a long one. There's going to be some editing. This might be two parts. Who knows what's going to happen?
I'm not going to lie. I did expect Harpy to be a little bit more controversial, but it seems that you mostly accepted the points I made.
I accept the points you make.
I mean, I think we all understand.
It just like...
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Emma.
Like, what do these points ultimately matter if storytellers aren't going to punish Harpy Madness breaks?
So true.
Like, in a more serious way. Because, like, if they're not going to do that, the only thing the Harpy has is the cheese and the gimmicks. Which, I love the cheese and the gimmicks, and it's fun to think of new Harpy cheese and gimmicks. Mm-hmm. It's fun to think of, how can I make Harpy Bluffing Psychopath work? It's fun to, like, think about the setups of, when does it make sense, and will the storyteller agree that I get to kill myself? When is it fun to make Harpy Bluffing Witch work? When do all these different things work, make fun to work, is interesting, and like that's like the part of the Harpy that doesn't rely on a rework of the, especially online, but even in person metas of, oh, as long as I'm saying certain keywords, and giving everyone a big wink, I'm safe.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say a big thank you to Mullabok and Navian for joining us. We always appreciate having y'all on the podcast, my friends. Is there anything you would like to shill for? Or please tell us, of course, tell everyone where you can be found. Of course, we all know you're all over the place, but here, this is your spotlight. Enjoy.
Well, you can find me over at CTBOTC. We have a server on Discord. We also stream to Twitch on Fridays with myself and Demeta. And sometimes, if Demeta cannot make it, Mullabok is my subs tomato.
Yeah, you can find me. I usually, game-wise, I play in Connecticut, play on the TBI Sunday stream sometimes, and then roast milk and save a night on Tuesdays in the Grim Scenarios chat. So there's that. I'm a moderator on the unofficial Blood on the Clock Tower Discord. If you have rules questions, head over there. Me and some other people can happily field those questions at any time. And Navy and I also stream non-Clock Tower things on Wednesdays as our schedules permit under my username, Mullabok, on Twitch.
I will also add that there is no pixie point laundering going on when Mullabok and I watch Grim Scenarios on Tuesdays every week.
Investigations are ongoing.
May your scenarios stay grim, friends.
Mm.
We'll see you next time.